Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The best in the business. Tomorrow, Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call on Penn State football. Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus, will concentrate our focus on baseball during this half hour. We'll be joined in a few moments by Liz Rocher, writer for Yahoo Sports and co-host of the Good Fight podcast. But before we get to Liz, we'll stay with the baseball theme. Our play-by-play call of the day, Old Man River. Ryan Zimmerman gets it done on WJFK.
3-2 to Zimmerman. Swinging a chopper third base side. Tough chance coming in. Bregman bare hands the ball to throw to first. Throws it away. Here comes the second run. He'll score. Zimmerman goes to second. Nobody there. And the throw is not in time with Cabrera scoring behind Kendrick. It's a single and an error, and the Nationals lead 8-2. Zimmerman ends up at second on the play with his second swinging bunt hit of the night. Bregman throws it away, allowing Cabrera to score, and Zimmerman to take second. Six runs home in the inning, and Presley's going to be taken out.
That's okay. It wasn't the last one they take out because the Nationals won it 12-3. It is an off day. They play Game 3 in D.C. tomorrow night. With that, we bring in Liz Rocher, Yahoo Sports. Liz, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
Joe Girardi, what was the initial reaction you had to seeing the veteran manager named as the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies?
I'm pretty thrilled. I think he'll be a good fit. He's feels sort of like the baby bear of the of the Goldilocks story here. He's, you know, he has some analytics, but he's also a veteran manager that knows how to make decisions from his gut. So I'm pretty thrilled.
All right. So, I mean, let's get to that part because that was allegedly what steered the Yankees. And, you know, he had been there a while, but they said, like, they really wanted more of an analytics feel. And in the interview process after Joe left, Aaron Boone convinced them that he had an analytics background. In some ways, is this the Phillies not quite doing completely opposite, but going in a different direction from Gabe Kapler's approach?
I think it is. You know, it's definitely not a total turnaround, but they were clearly looking for someone with more traditional background who could provide stability in the clubhouse, you know, who's willing to police the clubhouse a little bit. You know, someone who'll be willing to make decisions on the field with his eyes and not always, you know, use the spreadsheet.
Right, so not using the spreadsheet and also keeping the clubhouse in line. Have you had any reaction from anybody among the players as to how they feel about the change?
I don't think I've seen anything yet. The Phillies just announced it officially, so I'm going to guess that the players probably didn't want to say anything until it was official. But, you know, I know a few of them were really attached to Kapler, but, you know, owner John Middleton flew out and talked to a lot of people about whether or not they should, you know, about what their feelings were. So I hope that they're happy, or at least they go in with an open mind next season. You know, Girardi has a pretty good reputation, so hopefully, you know, that will precede him and everyone will, you know, approach it with, you know, an open mind and be willing to work with him.
All right, so let me get to another one that I think is interesting, and that is staying away from the game for a period of time, away from the game for a couple of years. What do you think that does some for somebody when they're away from the game for a couple of years, they're in an analyst position? Do you think it allows them to see the game maybe in a different way instead of always being in that dugout?
I was going to just say that. I think I agree. I think that's exactly what it does. You know, Girardi heard a lot of stuff about himself after he was fired. He heard stuff about not being a good communicator, about being a little cold. I can't imagine the Phillies would have hired him if, you know, he didn't address those things personally. So I'm going to guess, you know, I can't imagine it didn't help him. You know, he got to see the game, which evolved a lot between, you know, from when he started with the Yankees, from when he finished. It allowed him to sort of see how the game had changed while he was sort of in the middle of it. You know, he has this big view of it now. You know, and he got to talk about it on television a lot. So I really think it helped.
Obviously, the other names that were mentioned included Buck Showalter being one and Dusty Baker being another. What do you think in the end throws a Joe Girardi over the top? I mean, obviously, you don't have the contact to say, you know, you weren't sitting in the room when they figured it out. But what do you think threw him over the top?
I think it's the middle ground he provides. I like Dusty Baker a lot. I like Buck Showalter. I think both of them would have been good hires. But I think I feel like Joe Girardi was the good mix of what John Middleton was looking for and what Matt Klentak was looking for. You know, the analytics and the, you know, the old school way. I think with Showalter and Dusty Baker, I think they both trended a whole lot more towards the I'm going to do it my way all the time and not listen to what the GM has to say. And I really don't think that I don't think that would have flown very well.
Is this the kind of organization where the GM has a say in what the lineup looks like that night?
I think it definitely did last year. I think that's why Gabe Kapler was hired. He was hired to be a communicator with the players and to execute the vision of the GM and the analytics department. And I think that ended up being the problem with Gabe Kapler. You know, the players loved him because he let the players kind of do what they wanted in the clubhouse. He let them police themselves. And Matt Klentak was happy with him because he was doing exactly what he wanted him to. So, yeah, I really think that that's why he was fired in the end. Because he didn't have any managerial experience, and he was just depending entirely on, you know, what he was being told to do instead of doing what a manager should do, which is make decisions on the field with your eyes in real time with the information you're seeing.
Liz, I felt last offseason, there isn't a single move the Phillies made last offseason I disagree with. I thought, okay, that's a good move. To me, in the end, despite whatever anybody may think about Gabe Kapler, I think what last season showed me is that they had further to go than anybody realized. Is that a fair assessment on my part, or did I miss something?
I think that's fair. I think we were all expecting them to come out like gangbusters. You know, the signing Bryce Harper, trading for JT Realmuto, trading for Gene Segura, those were all big moves. And the Phillies had problems with hitting. They were very poor offensively. You know, of course, they were in the middle of that rebuild, but they had a lot to do offensively, and they just completely ignored the pitching. And I think that ended up biting them a lot because they missed out on some good pitchers last year that could have helped them in the future. And the market's a lot smaller this year. I think that's definitely a fair assessment. They have farther to go, and they've sort of made it hard on themselves to make up that ground.
If I had to pick any part of a baseball team that to me is the swing part, is the guesswork, it is to me guesswork, that you're going to get one or two of those guys that can pitch the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning, and one or two of those guys have career years, and it gets you to the promised land. How tough is that, Liz, to try and find somebody that you know has something, but they've never put it completely together that can fill that spot?
If someone figures that out, they'll be running the most successful baseball team in, you know, history.
This is where you and I have an opportunity, Liz, to go out and figure it out, and then all of a sudden we'll be golden for 20 years.
Exactly. Like, that is the toughest part. You know, you look at the Nationals this year. They're doing so well. You know, and they've got players who are good, who have been good in the past and who have the potential to be good. But unless you put all that together at once, bullpen, starting pitching, and hitting, you can't really make it to the top. You look at the Phillies in 2008, you know, and they were good after that, you know, for another 4 years, but it was like lightning struck because Brad Lidge was on fire, Chase Utley on fire, you know, Cole Hamels on fire. Every part of the game, of the Phillies game, was working. And the Phillies tried last year, you know, they signed a lot of guys who had high potential and low, you know, they hadn't been injured a lot in their careers, and then they all got injured almost immediately. I mean, you can't predict baseball, sadly, but yeah, it's tough to find guys who can fill that role, and you just never know what they're going to give you.
All right, so now let's get to you can't predict baseball. The Astros are down 2-0 to the Washington Nationals. Now, the pitching matchups were dynamic for the first two. Now we're going to get to the gray part of the series coming up. What have you thought of the first two games, and what's made the difference?
The Nationals have, coming into it as an underdog, really. I think it helps in some ways, especially for a team like the Nationals, who have a lot of guys in there. They have a lot of young, really young guys, and guys in like my age, in their mid to late 30s, who are, you know, they're coming in and pulling together. I feel like that helps a lot, you know, keeping it loose. And you can see it in the way they play, you know. They're fighting for every single at bat, every single play, every single ball that comes their way. You know, they're all fighting. You know, and people say you can't really quantify things like clubhouse chemistry and how that type of thing affects baseball. But in the World Series, you can really see it. You know, the Astros have gone, you know, in that first game, they went through Gerrit Cole getting smacked around, which hasn't happened in months and months. And I think it sort of set them on their ear. And in the game last night, they started out fine. The game was tied, but like a couple of little mistakes suddenly snowballed into like a 6-run inning. And it just felt like they were being held together by like a tiny piece of string, and it broke. So, I mean, the difference might just be mental, because these are fairly equal baseball teams. Even though the Nationals got in via the wild card, these are pretty equal baseball teams. And when the unexpected happens, a team has to be ready to sort of pick themselves up and plow forward. And the Astros just sort of seem a little hopeless right now.
In fact, I find interesting is that wild card win and in how they did it. I felt like lifted a burden off the shoulder of the Nationals. I felt they've played loose ever since. Houston, to me, is playing tight right now, like they have something to lose, and they are.
Exactly. I feel like that wild card win helped the Nationals feel like they deserve to be there. And then they had to fight back against the Dodgers. They were facing elimination in two straight games. And they showed up and played, you know, some of the best baseball of their season. Like, I'd written the Nationals off early in the season. And, you know, looking at things, they have a record that is equal to the Astros in the second half. Like, they're a legitimately good baseball team, and I feel like the Astros just weren't prepared. Maybe they underestimated them a little bit. You know, they would never admit to that publicly, but I feel like, you know, you see a team that had to get in with the, you know, via the wild card, and you feel like maybe that's a team you can beat really easily. Because how much adversity have the Astros faced this year? I don't think they faced a lot. They won like 106 games.
I think the single greatest adversity they had was finding their way to the ballpark a couple times. That was about it. I mean, obviously they've had some guys hurt. Like Altuve was hurt early. Correa was banged up for a little bit. But that's been about it. Yeah. You know, I mean, the adversity of how do I fit Zach Greinke in? Yeah, okay. All right.
It's like the Phillies in 2011. Oh, no, too much good pitching.
Yeah, exactly. Who do we start in game one? All right. Liz, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Really appreciate your time and your insight very, very much.
Anytime. My pleasure.
Liz Rocher joining us from YahooSports.com. Also has... her own podcast on top of that, which is outstanding, the Good Fight Podcast. Liz does a great job. Great to have her with us on the show today. All right. We will come back with more in a moment, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. Our thanks to Liz Rocher for joining us to talk about the Phillies hiring Joe Girardi. That is a hire I really like. I freely admit I was not sure about the Gabe Kapler hire. And part of that may be my personal prejudice about I'm not sure yet that a complete analytics way is the right way yet to run a game. You know, and I don't mean it can't be an important influence on decisions you make or help you make some advanced decision making. I mean, that to me is fine. I understand that. But I'm not quite on board yet with you manage the entire game that way. You know, just like I'm not so sure you manage the entire game either with the idea of doing it just with instinct and feel. I think you go in, like sometimes you'll see a coach or a manager with a card. You know, and the card is there as a reminder, like, hey, look, you know, when I get to, let's just take, I don't know, third down and four, red zone. This reminds me, you know what? We did a heck of a job on that in practice this week with this play here. That's fine. Or you're a basketball coach. Okay. In practice, the last week or so as we go into this game, we ran this half-court set really well, and the players are really comfortable with it. So I've got it written down on the card here. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Or reminding yourself, okay, let's take basketball. Basketball can take analytics to the point where a coach has an analytical breakdown of what his best lineup combinations are, who works best together. It's fine. That's perfectly fine. And then there are other times you've got to look out there and say, you know what, I've been watching this all night, and you know what, I think this is going to work right here. And I'll give you an example of that. A great example of that would be the Iowa game, the third down and 10, where Ricky Ronnie calls the quarterback draw for Sean Clifford. And he gets 12 yards out of it. That's one of those where you're looking at it all night long and saying, you know what? We get to this spot. This is what they've been running. I'm going to, you know, and part of, you know, you got to guess, right? This is going to work here. We've blocked this well all night. And also, sometimes they run stunts. And it's third and long. And that's one of those instinct calls. So they both play a role in it. You just can't be all instinct, and you just can't be all analytics. I think you need a combination of the two, whether you're managing or coaching. It all comes into play. Then once the game starts, it's okay to have reminders. We just say, look at the card and go, okay. Yep, okay. These were our best three 90-second to go in the game plays. Okay, these are my best third and eight plays. Or my best third and two plays. Whatever. Same thing in managing. Right? You know what? I know how many pitches he's thrown so far, but he looks so good, I'm going to leave him out there another inning. Or he's fought his guts out to get to this point. Let's call him tonight. Let's get a fresh arm out there. I mean, things like that. Just as it's not always based on it's the third time through the order. Now, for Tampa Bay, it worked. Let's give Kevin Cash credit where credit's due. Another Kevin's next half hour. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You always want to deal with the best. Sunbury Motors, best product, best sales staff, best service department, best management. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What was thought to be a make or break week, Sean, ended up being stable all the way around.
We were all stable, all three of us, 4-3. So, yes, still an 8-game lead between me and your brother, and you're right there, smack dab in the middle at 35-30. Hey, speaking of your brother, number 78 formerly in your Enfield High School football program, now number one in our hearts, our end-of-week tradition, one day early because we just can't wait. Shamalama ding dong, here he is, Steve, your brother, Kevin Jones.
Yabba dabba doo.
Yeah, that too. That's right. You added that in your text yesterday. That's right.
He did.
How's it going?
Great.
We're great.
All going fine.
Hope you're feeling good, buddy.
How's the college? How's the Penn State looking? Hey, you know, I'm going to live 3/4 of a mile from Gamble Pavilion. Actually, on the UConn property, right on the edge of it.
So the real estate deal? That's a done deal?
Yeah, it's a done deal. We got the house. We're just waiting for a check, and the closing is the 22nd of November. So no more walking to work. So.
Well, the guy that used to play there and then was part of their administration there now lives 8 houses down the street from Jen. Kevin Freeman.
Small world.
So. Kevin Freeman. Yeah, he's assistant coach here now. He lives on the same street as my daughter Jen does.
UConn's not a big campus, nothing like Penn State, but it's a beautiful campus. So, yeah. Beautiful area. So. Kind of can't wait to get there and get out of here. So anyway, me and Sean were texting back and forth last week during the game. I've got a question, and you guys are experts on Penn State. I'm a fan who watches on TV. In the last 4 years, they have a pattern of in the second half against good teams, it's like you're watching the clock and hoping the game ends because you can't stop the other team at all. And what do you think the reason is?
Well, I mean, every game takes on its own personality. They've had games, they've taken 2016. Penn State was the team that was coming from behind all the time. Then, you know, so the personality last year was that they get into a spot where in a pretty good spot and couldn't hold teams back. This time, because of the depth on the football team, the play counts are not as dramatic on defense. And I'll give you an example. Nick Scott last year against Indiana, between special teams and the game, played 110 plays in the game.
They're tired. Well, your answer is they're tired.
Well, then. Not now.
Because when
this
you
is
watch,
different now.
I mean, I play
this
ball,
is,
you
this
play
is,
ball.
But this is different
when players
now.
Players are making arm tackles in the third quarter, they're tired.
This is different now. They were not, I can tell you right now, they weren't even remotely tired against Iowa. The kid just made a great catch. to close the gap. That's the only thing
Iowa
did.
I'm talking about Michigan.
Michigan.
You were there. They could not stop them. And on the offensive line,
Except that's not true.
They were totally outmanned in the second half.
Except that's not true, because what happened was, if you can't stop them, why would you stop them three plays and then they convert a fourth down? And they converted a couple of fourth downs to keep drives alive when they got stopped in the first three.
It was
hard to watch because you were hoping that somehow they'd stop themselves. But they didn't stop themselves.
They couldn't move on offense, and they couldn't stop them on defense. It's just an opportunity to ask somebody who really knows a lot about it.
I think Michigan played the best game it could play.
Yeah,
I watched all the tapes. That's the best Michigan can play.
They looked very good in that second half.
And Penn State may not have played its A game. And guess what?
They did when they had to. They stopped them when they had to.
Penn State won. What does it tell you about how good Penn State is if the other team that's very talented played its A game and still couldn't win?
True. But if the game had gone another 5 minutes, they wouldn't have won. So, I mean, beyond the long bomb there, they didn't do anything on offense in the second half.
But the long bomb is the key, because explosive plays are the key. There are several keys in a game, right? We talk about them all the time that are really important. One is giveaway takeaway. Well, in giveaway takeaway, Penn State was plus one. They had the game's only takeaway, and not only did they have the game's only takeaway, they scored a touchdown off of it. They won by a touchdown.
How about possession?
But again, let's go to the next part. You talk about they couldn't move the ball offensively, but it also meant that every single drive Penn State had in the game ended with a kick and not with a takeaway.
The punter is great.
Yep, very important.
He's the MVP of the team.
Penn State also had better field position, in part because of the punter and also the defense, but at better field position on the average of 4 yards per possession. So when you're looking at giveaway, takeaway, you're looking at field position, and then the third one is explosive plays. Penn State had 6 plays in that game of better than 20 yards. Michigan had 2. And that makes a big difference in the outcome of the game, too. Penn State's explosive plays led to points. Michigan had to keep trying to cobble together long drives to do it. Thus, they ran themselves out of time. And then Penn State, for the second consecutive week, when they had the opportunity to put the game away.
Yeah.
They got the first down and put the game away. The defense never came back on the field.
Yeah. No, I'm just asking. I mean, I was holding my breath in the second half. I thought they were going to lose. Honest to God, they could not stop them. They get the ball and went right down the field. Penn State get the ball back, and they were 3-0. But they got the first down when they had to. And, well, fortunately, the kid dropped the ball and the perfect pass in the end zone. I mean, that was a catchable ball, and he dropped it.
Yeah.
But that's sports. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So they're
7-0, not bad.
Because I'm telling you right now, I'm taking them over Notre Dame.
I was
impressed by them. Man, they are a physical, tough team.
Yep.
That kind of gets in its own way, but I think they could beat anyone in the country if they really played
their A game
for 4 quarters. So
they've got talent. There's no question.
Uh-huh.
They've got talent.
They do. Their offensive and defensive lines are monsters. Well, good for Penn State. They won. That was a tough one. I was like, boy, you know. You go from the – and it kind of started at the end of the first half, you know, that Michigan found something and knew they had it. And Harbaugh, after the first half, he said, we got this, you know. And he saw something, and they just ran out of time. But you can't fall that far behind and expect to be a good team like Penn State. But it was cool, and the whiteout was cool. I'm sure, obviously, you guys saw it, and you were there. the ESPN and the whiteout the students had there, too,
yeah.
for the pregame. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, the game day? Yeah, that looked cool.
Yeah.
No, the fans here do a great job with it. You can't duplicate
they sure
it.
Did.
Can't duplicate it. It's the original.
Yeah.
And the fans here really, really respond to it.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. So that's all. You answer my question. So I feel better. I just we're texting back and forth. I was like, "Oh my God!" I'm watching the clock. Please end. Please end.
Well, when you were getting into the tired part, Kevin, I replied back to you in regards to conditioning. I said, "There's no way, shape, or form they're getting out conditioned out there. I mean, it has nothing to do with that."
Well,
at all.
You know what though? They've played a lot of people, and so what I do is the day after a game, is I look at the play counts. And when I'm seeing, there are 83 plays that Michigan ran in the game. 83. Penn State had a couple of players more than 70 plays. But I would say a good chunk of them were in the low 60s to mid 60s. And that's a normal game. Okay, low 60s to mid 60s is playing a normal game these days. And that's so that is really no big deal because they're playing 25 guys on defense. So you keep that number down so that when you get to that last drive, now you're running in fresh players that actually may be your starters, but they're fresher than they normally would be because their play counts are still in the normal range and not over the line.
Well, I made that comment because I, early in the third quarter, I forgot who the color guy was, but Kirk Herbstreit. He said they're making Penn State defense is making arm tackles, and Michigan's running right through them. And I mean, I played ball. You played ball. When you start
making arm tackles, you're tired. Yeah, Jack made that comment.
No longer doing a form tackle, you're reaching and hoping you can take the guy down by reaching at him. But you don't really want to confront them, you know, because you're tired. And that was early in the third quarter. I'm like, wow, you know.
Well, remember, too, Penn, this is why, for example, I'll make this quick because I know I have to do picks.
Yeah.
Why don't I think that the Central Floridas of the world or the SMUs of the world or Houston or whatever, why don't they deserve to be in the college football playoff? Because they don't play the schedule these people play.
I mean,
Penn State played at Iowa, tough, physical team the week before.
True.
Then had to play Michigan, tough, hard, physical team. Now they got Michigan State. I mean, Central Florida, no, with all due respect, hey, we're going to play Memphis this week.
Okay, you get to play Connecticut.
You're going to play UConn.
Connecticut almost won a game.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's the issue is they don't play that kind of schedule. I mean, LSU's got Auburn this week, and then their next game's Alabama.
Yeah.
Well, exactly what weeks does that happen for Central Florida?
Oh,
they can beat a team.
I get what you're saying. I was off on the conditioning thing. I'm not saying they're out of shape. I was just like,
oh no!
Look,
anybody's going to get
tired. Like my God, they can't.
Yeah.
They stopped them in the first half, and now they can't in the second half. And arm tackles is you're not going to stop good athletes with an arm tackle. And I'm sure they went over it on defense all week long.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Not going to
beat. All right, so let's make we got to make some picks, though.
All right, 9 weeks down. On to week 10. All right, so we already talked a little bit about Notre Dame and Michigan. That was going to be our third game in the roster, but why don't we just lead off with that? Notre Dame, Michigan, primetime on Saturday night. You two said you're going to go. Yeah, go ahead.
Michigan. Yep.
I got Michigan.
I'm taking Notre Dame for this reason. Every time I've chosen Michigan against a highly ranked team, they go down in flames. It's going to continue. It's going to continue Saturday night. I've got Notre Dame.
Okay.
Good pick.
Yeah, well, we'll
at home
out.
Too. Oh no, they're in Michigan. Oh.
You know, every time I'd hang my hat on Michigan, then they get dusted by Wisconsin, and it's like, you know. So
I didn't pick Michigan in that game.
That's true. You didn't. That's true. That was the one time I thought they'd turn the corner, and they didn't. I think we're seeing the start of the end of the Jim Harbaugh era. I really do.
I think you got a real good point.
You're getting into that time where, you know, he starts to, you know, look for other options, maybe go somewhere else. You know, he has a tendency of not staying long. I know this was the dream job. I know he's trying. It's like Halloween every year, every week where he tries to look like Bo on the sideline with the glasses and the hat and the pants and all that. But
these are the games he's got to win if he doesn't want to lose his job. He may not.
Yeah. It's like the Shikalimi play-by-play guy just pining to be the North Dakota State player.
Can't keep losing big games.
All right, high noon. High noon on Saturday.
Every year.
Ohio Stadium. You got the Buckeyes in Wisconsin. That's your big noon Saturday game on Fox. Why don't we let the leader of this thing go first?
I don't think I'm going on a limb. I think Wisconsin's a very solid team, and they are very angry right now, and I'm taking Wisconsin. I think they're going to upset Ohio State. I don't think Ohio State's played anything like this team this year, and Wisconsin's going to come out and flex their muscles and win the game. Wisconsin
needs to do three things to win the game. Number one, they need to shorten the game, which means number two, they have to run the ball. They need to have some time-consuming drives. No, Wisconsin's great at running the ball. And number three, they're going to have to win the turnover battle. I think they lose one of the three, and that causes them to lose the game. Ohio State wins.
Yep, I'm also taking
too much margin of error there.
Good picks.
All right, so we mentioned LSU a couple of minutes ago here in our conversation. You know, the back-to-back weeks, Auburn, Alabama. That's right, the Tigers, Death Valley, hosting Auburn this weekend.
I've got LSU. I think they're arguably the best team in the country.
LSU not only wins, but they win by at least 2 to 3 touchdowns.
I've also got LSU in this one.
That quarterback's good.
Yes, he is. Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
Ohio State didn't think he was good enough.
I know. Haskins started over him. So,
yeah.
Well, they still won without him.
And to the Big 12. We have Oklahoma State at Iowa State.
Boy, this is a tough one. This is a really tough game.
Yeah. I took Iowa State.
I don't have
a solid reason why I flipped the coin.
The only reason I'm taking Iowa State is they're the home team.
Yeah,
I did
too. It's the only reason I'm picking them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It's a very good game. After that, there's not a whole lot of good games in the country.
No, wait till next week. I mean, remember, game day's at South Dakota State this week.
Really? Oh, I love South Dakota. I love watching them play ball.
South Dakota State is playing North Dakota State, so that's the game they're going to feature. They go to South Dakota State.
North Dakota State's the one I love to watch. Oh, my God.
Yeah, watch out for those.
Good football there.
Yeah, watch out for those Jackrabbits.
Yeah.
Just any time we can say Jackrabbits in the show, that's always a good thing.
Beautiful.
All right, 3 minutes to go, three games, NFL Sunday. We have Arizona at the Saints. Will Drew Brees play?
Even if he does it, the Saints are going to win.
Yeah, I got New Orleans.
Yeah, we all do. Yep.
Salute to Teddy Bridgewater. Way to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Good for him.
Yeah. All right. Kev, we're going to go in a different order. We'll finish with Green Bay, Kansas City. So we'll go with Carolina at the undefeated San Francisco 49ers.
I got to take the Niners. Defense is really good. And they're not winning because of Garoppolo. They're winning because of a total team effort. And they're well coached, and they can run the ball. And when Garoppolo gets better and better, they're going to be a tough out. I got the Niners.
Niners.
Well, I was going to pull the trigger on an upset, but I just can't. We're going to go with San Francisco.
Good pick. You know, there's no games. I'm going down the line trying to pick a good game. There's like five good teams.
Yeah.
And the rest suck.
I agree with you. You know? I agree with you.
But
I
you got
think the chasm
really
between
like
the
that.
Haves and the have-nots is bigger than ever.
But figuring out these landmines, just figuring out the weekend when there's going to be like a huge thing going, you know, go down, like the Jets beating Dallas a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. There's some weird thing happened.
And I got to think, okay, is this going to be the weekend where Carolina could knock off San Francisco?
Absolutely
no.
can. They got a good running back there who can steal a game. So
no.
And Sunday night primetime, we've got the Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Will Pat Mahomes play? Probably not. I mean, he's not
Green
on
Bay.
Green Bay.
Yeah.
Green
yeah.
Bay.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I just don't see him playing. He practiced yesterday a little bit, but still,
Well, that's okay. A guy in the back office was practicing his play-by-play yesterday, too, but that didn't count either.
Like, it could be a difference between practicing and honing your skills. Or is that the same thing?
Oh, Chuckle Lemon!
Hey, senior night tomorrow night for them Braves. Keep that number keep that number three seed in Quad A.
Yeah. But you know what? They could have a four-game winning streak going in.
That's right. Which one, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.